Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show. The show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Both of these guys back to the show. Hello, I'm on the air right now. I can hear myself. David and Aaron, can you hear me? Is everything okay?
Hello. All good.
Yeah,
okay,
I can hear you.
Great. Thank you so much, guys, for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I don't know if you heard me or not, but I was explaining that I'm having a little difficulty with my internet. I just moved into a new place, and the internet has been very, very spotty, but I'm thinking now that I can hear you and you can hear me. We're live on the air. Again, I want to thank both of you for coming on the show here today. In case anybody didn't hear it, I was mentioning that Aaron Brink was no stranger to the mixed martial arts community, no stranger to my audience, is going to be making the leap to bare-knuckle fighting, as so many MMA fighters are. It has been absolutely amazing, David, what you guys have been able to do in terms of giving the fans, MMA fighters, well-known MMA legends and fighters, former UFC champions, fighting on your events, providing really exciting fights for the fans, high finishing rates, so on and so forth. And the amount of buzz and what you guys have been able to do with only two events has been just absolutely amazing. But before we get into the next event and some questions I may have for you, David, Aaron, I wanted to kind of start with you, if you wouldn't mind. How did you get in contact with David, and how did this all come together as far as you fighting bare knuckle fighting?
I've actually heard about the event. I saw it online, and then I spoke to a colleague. I was actually calling out Shannon McKinnon Rich. I was talking to him on the internet, just kind of jawing back and forth. He's kind of a friend, but also I wanted to fight him, you know. And he's like, "Hey, dude, let's fight each other in this show." You know, this guy, he's a real reputable promoter, and he takes care of his fighters. So I looked into it. He gave me the number for this event, and I spoke to David Feldman, and we had a match right away. You know, that we had a good relationship. We built it right away.
Now, Aaron, you've been fighting for quite some time now. I mean, you have so many fights. I don't have your record in front of me, but, I mean, well over 50 fights in various different organizations. Have you ever fought bare knuckle before?
No, I've never done organized bare knuckle fighting, but I've become very familiar with the rules of it, and I've been training in it. I started out as a professional boxer. I have a professional boxing background, and the sparring that I've been doing is with a lot of boxers. And so as far as like my experiences, I see that I have a really strong advantage in this type of fighting facet.
Now you're fighting at the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, their third event in Biloxi, Mississippi, which is October 20th, against Jason Phan. Tell us, what do you know about your opponent?
I know about my opponent is a striker. He is a kickboxer, more so than a boxer. He has a mixed martial arts background as well. He likes to strike. I think that my advantage is going to be my boxing advantage and my punching skills. And I believe that Phan is a perfect start to showcase in this organization and to show and win over the fans in general for bare knuckle fighting.
Now, David, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, you guys have really bring over a who's who of mixed martial art fighters. It's like I said, it's been nothing short of amazing. I mean, some of the talent that you brought in, former UFC champions, legends like Chris Lytle, Kendall Grove, just really, really tough and very, very exciting fighters. Was that sort of the idea of bringing Aaron Brink along? I mean, a guy with a long history in the sport and a guy that's primarily a striker and an exciting fighter?
Well, you know what it really is about Aaron. I mean, I was introduced to him from Shannon Rich, but Aaron reached out to me, and I was definitely very familiar with him, but I wasn't familiar about his style so much, so I looked him up. And the thing that stood out to me, I looked him up on the UFC site, actually, and it said strengths 100% striking. So I was like, this is the guy that's going to fit for this organization. Then he was sending me some different text messages and pictures of himself and training. And the difference, I think, with Aaron and some of these other guys that are stepping over is this isn't just another payday. He's really studying this form. He's studying what's going to make him good at this style of fighting and what he can add in his own abilities to make this the right kind of style for him. And that's what really intrigues me about Aaron. And really, as a fan, not a promoter, I really can't wait to see him fight, because I think what he's been telling me is going to really stand out on October 20th. And I can't wait to see him fight Jason Phan, another guy who just wants to come to fight. You know, he didn't, when I offered him the fight at first, he didn't even ask the purse. He said, "What's the date?" And he said, "I'm in." And then I told him who it was and the person. He was great. He was great with this. So I'm very much looking forward to this fight. But I think as Aaron has been in there with everybody, you know, who's who in MMA, and, you know, he's 43 years old now, but if you look at him, he looks like, you know, and I'm a little older than him, but he looks like he's like a 22-year-old guy. He's chiseled, man. This guy's stayed in shape. He's doing his thing, and, you know, it's not just about the money. That's what I like about him. Look, we're all hoping to make a lot of money here, and we're going to grow into this where everybody can make some good money. But this fight, you know, he didn't hound me. It wasn't about money. It was about I want the opportunity, and he's getting the opportunity, and we can't wait to showcase him on October 20th.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, I'm not too familiar with his opponent, but, you know, based on some of the stuff that I've seen, this is tailor-made for bare-knuckle fighting, I would say.
No, absolutely, 100%. I think it's, you know, it's the perfect kind of style for this, and, you know, with Jason having the Muay Thai kickboxing type of background and Aaron having, you know, like I said, his strengths were striking, former boxer, and he's in top shape. I'm really, as a fan, looking forward to this, but as a promoter, I'm really looking forward to this to give the fans the kind of excitement that we're trying to bring to bare knuckle fighting.
Aaron, can you give us an idea of what the training is like for this fight? Because obviously the training is much, much different, must be much, much different, I would think, than fighting and training for a traditional mixed martial arts fight. You don't have to worry about takedowns. You don't have to worry about kicks or knees or anything like that. How has your training been going into this fight?
My training for this, what I do is I do a lot of boxing with the boxers, and I have the guys come in. Basically, I've found that most of these guys that are boxers that can punch real well, I'm able to punch with them, but the grind with as I get into the clinch, and I use that clinch only to set up opportunities to strike with my hands, and I'm grinding these guys down within like one or two rounds. And these guys are used to be going 8 and 10 rounds, and so I found my niche using my uppercuts, using the body shots, and using fighting really long, and I just found my range. And the rounds are shorter. So I was at about 210 when I first started talking to Dave, and I was doing 5-minute rounds, doing MMA, and I'm looking at now doing shorter rounds. So I'm doing more fast twitch training. I'm doing more weight training and do more explosive fast twitch, so I can explode into the into each exchange. And as Dave said, I've really found my niche as far as it's this exact event and this sport. I think it's going to be, for me, it's actually opening up a whole nother little chapter for my career.
Yeah, absolutely. And David, as you said, I think this really is kind of an opportunity, and I'm not just saying this lightly. I think this is an opportunity pretty much for anybody. Based on the amount of buzz that your organization has created and attention and seemingly stability only after two events that you guys have put on, why do you think it is that bare knuckle fighting, a sport that has a real long history in the United States, but is not regulated everywhere, obviously. Why do you think it is that this sport in your version of the sport, if you will, is catching on with so many people and so many fighters alike?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's was viewed as almost like the forbidden fruit. It was something that we were having underground. There were underground fights going on all over the country, and people were able to hear about them, read about them in different magazines, but not actually view them. So it's still, as you just mentioned, it's not regulated in a lot of states yet. We are opening up states pretty much, one every other week or so at this point, because they're seeing what we're doing and they're listening to what we had been saying. But, pitching these states and pitching the commissions for the past actually 8 years that we've been doing it in 28 states that turned us down before we finally got the one that opened up to us, it's perception. So they have perception of this bare knuckle fighting that it's a backyard fight, it's a bar fight. It's far from that. It's the sweetest science. It's not just the sweet science as boxing is, it's the sweetest science because you have to pick your shots, you have to be very technical. And as Aaron said, he's learning different techniques to get inside and to do different things to, employ his type of offense. So I think that to answer your question in one statement would be, I think it's because, like I said, it was viewed as the forbidden fruit, and now people are starting to be able to see it, so they just don't know, wow, am I allowed to watch this or am I not allowed to watch this? And, I think that we're giving a lot of opportunities to a lot of different fighters who may not have been great ground fighters or may not have been able to dance around the boxing ring, but they want to stand there and bang it out, and I think this is a perfect opportunity for a lot of guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I've said earlier, I mean, you guys, assuming we have a very high finish rate with your fights, which is always very exciting for the fans, but we're not seeing, and I've had Ken Shamrock on my show years ago, and he made the argument that bare-knuckle boxing can be actually considered safer than regular boxing, and then even mixed martial arts where you have some of the strikes that you won't have in bare knuckle boxing. Do you think that's the case? Do you think that bare knuckle boxing, the way that you guys have arranged it, is actually safer for the fighter out there?
Well, you're talking safety. So safety is kind of an open-ended thing here. Is it safer long-term? Are the fighters going to get the head trauma that they get in boxing and MMA? Not as likely to get it in bare knuckle boxing as it is in boxing or in MMA, because you can take more punches in boxing, you can take more punches in MMA before you get knocked out or before you make it a cut. not maybe as safe when it comes to lacerations. We're definitely going to get lacerations faster. But, I mean, if you ask any athlete or any doctor in the world, what do you think is better for a fighter, to get a laceration or to get brain damage? I think it's an easy answer. It's to get a laceration. So as far as the safety of the fighters, actual safety and the longevity of the fighters themselves and their brains, bare knuckle fighting is absolutely a safer sport than any other combat sport out there. And I would argue to say it's probably one of the most exciting combat sports out there as well. So I think it, you know, gives the fans what they want, but it's also, you know, protecting the fighters. And as the sport grows, the fighters are going to learn how to throw punches a little different. They're going to learn how to do defense a little different, offense a little different here and there. They're going to learn different tricks from different guys. And I think we're going to see the fights go longer and longer. As in our last show, actually, Bare Knuckle Fight Championship 2, we had the majority of the fights actually went the distance, and we only had a few fights that were knockouts. But very, very exciting nonetheless. And again, because Aaron's on here, and I really can't wait to see Aaron fight, because not only because of he's a striker and he was a good fighter, but because he's actually studying this and how he can make it how he can use the best offense for himself and how he can make it so exciting for the fans. And that's why I'm really looking forward to seeing him.
Yeah, absolutely. Aaron, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, you know, the strategies. There's so many different strategies, and that I'm so much looking forward, because it's a gentleman's sport too. But it's like, well, you can, you know, you can use your head, you know, to make a person bust their hand. They have to. Like, he's talking about the angles. You can catch an elbow. You have to really consider the strategy involved in this bare knuckle, and that's what I think makes it a gentleman's sport so much. You know, and I'll be honest. I brought this up to my bishop of my church. I told him, hey, look, I stopped doing MMA and I'm going into bare knuckle fighting. It's a gentleman's sport. He goes, wow. He goes, you know what? I'm grateful that you've done this, because, you know, that MMA is going like the route of WWE and all the trash talk and all. This is actually two fighters and gentlemen going in fighting each other. I'm so, so grateful to be a part of this.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I like your term gentleman sport, because I have noticed that it seems that there's a good positive camaraderie between the fighters, respect out there and fights based on strategy and technique and not necessarily bad blood and whatnot. Do you think that's part of the reason why, David, or you know, maybe there's other reasons that so many MMA fighters out there are going the route of bare knuckle fighting?
Well, I also think as MMA is evolving, it's becoming more of a technical sport. I believe it's becoming more of a ground game. The fighters aren't standing up and banging it out as much as they used to in the olden days. Not saying that they still don't, but I don't think it's as much. I think it's becoming, like I said, more strategic with the ground game, and I think that that's what it's allowing some of these fighters that do want to stand and bang it out to cross over to our sport, to cross over to bare knuckle fighting. But it's also is very much a gentleman's sport. That's the one compliment that we're getting from all the fighters, is how much that, like, when we asked him, what did you like most about bare knuckle fighting? He said, I love the action, but what I really liked about it was that you stress sportsmanship. And, you know, we won't tolerate anything less than sportsmanship here, because we are a growing sport and a growing business. You know, we are leading the way for this entire sport. It's not just that we created a fight organization and we're putting on fights. It's that we did create a new sport, or brought back an old sport with a new twist. But we are the pioneers in that, and we're the guys that are leading the way. And because of that, you know, we stress over-the-top sportsmanship, but, you know, we want action too. I mean, the fighters are going to know, and Aaron's going to hear it at my pre-fight talk that I talk with the fighters. Look, we expect nothing but sportsmanship, but we also expect for you guys to go out there and leave it all on the line. When you toe that line, you're toeing the line to fight your butts off, and we will throw out bonuses and do whatever is necessary to make all the fighters happy and to make sure that they get paid what they should get paid for this kind of fighting.
You know, I find that amazing, that actual sportsmanship is actually seemingly part of the promotional process. I mean, that is something admirable there. I mean, you just don't see that with the UFC and Bellator, just it just seems like the opposite. And you know, to a certain extent, it's paid off for those organizations, arguably. But that's something definitely unique, I think, and that's definitely I think considerate on your part. You know, carrying the sport and launching and trying to perhaps get it regulated in other states and to continue putting on great shows. I think that's really, really important that you have that mindset as, you know, as the president of this organization.
Yeah, Bob, we definitely think that it's very important, and we think that is what's helping some of these fighters, you know, cross over, because they see it and they hear other fighters talk good about it. I don't think any of the 24 fighters so far can really say anything bad about us. I mean, we probably have one or two sore losers, but other than that, I mean, we treat the guys right. We're giving them a platform and a stage to really express their fighting ability. And, you know, we're giving them a chance to some of these guys to resurrect their career, some of these guys to become a first-time star in combat sports. And, you know, what we're doing that's unique rather than any other organization right now is we're actually doing tournaments for each and every weight division. And on this October 20th, we will be doing the finals of the heavyweight division.
Right.
And we will be doing the quarterfinals of the 135-pound division, which we call in bare knuckle fighting the lightweight division. We're doing that. And on the next one in January, we'll be starting the either 155 or 185-pound tournament. And as the sport evolves, we're going to create our own champion. And, you know, Aaron's right in the coming here right at the right time for the beginning of one of these tournaments. And, you know, we're going to let the fans kind of judge for themselves what kind of sport we really are. And we're not going to say, you know, this is the promoter's favorite fighter and I'm going to fight the promoter's second favorite fighter and those guys will fight for the championship. No, that's not how it's going to work here. It's going to work that the fighters that are going to go out there and fight their butts off the most and give the fans what they want, they're the guys that are going to be the champions and earn the money in this sport.
I got to ask you one more question, and I want to turn it over to Aaron for a few questions. Is what about this Beck Rawlings? I got to tell you, she has really, really been remarkable. Her two fights in your organization have been very, very exciting, and she's really kind of made a name for herself. An even bigger name for herself, arguably, outside of the UFC, with your organization. You know, give us your thoughts on Beck Rawlings, and if you think that, you know, what she's been able to do is going to provide, you know, incentive for other female fighters out there to join your ranks and participate.
Yeah, well, I think Beck has absolutely a different personality. She's got the sweetest little voice on her, but she can curse like a truck driver. She can fight like a man. I mean, she really came out and she surprised me with her boxing ability, and especially on the second fight, fighting a girl that was actually boxing her and trying to dance and everything, cutting off the ring and closing the gap on her and chasing her down. I think Beck did a sensational job, and I think right now she is the face of women's bare knuckle, and she's opening up the door for other women to come in. But she is absolutely now, she's a target, because all the women that are coming to us go, I want to fight back, because they see the notoriety and the popularity that Beck, you know, is getting right now. I mean, listen,
yeah,
this is our second event. We just did our second event. We were on the cover of the world's largest newspaper for two events in a row. I mean, that doesn't happen often. I mean, you don't even see these big organizations out now on the cover of the USA Today. We were on the cover of USA Today for our first fight, and Beck, they did a feature story on her about her domestic abuse and about her fighting ability on this fight. So, I mean, she's definitely getting that stardom. She did tell me that, you know, she used to go to boxing matches and people would, hey, how you doing? Now she can't go anywhere without signing an autograph in Australia. She said that she became a superstar overnight. So I think that, you know, that says a lot about our organization, but it also says a lot about women being able to fight in bare knuckle fighting and you know, the kind of opportunity that it's going to present for them.
Absolutely. Aaron, weight-wise, can you tell us, you know, what weight this fight will be at? And you know, what I'm assuming that you probably want to compete at the similar weight going forward.
Yes, to my knowledge, it's a heavyweight fight. I looked up the weights as far as like the commissions and concern and all that. It goes like to 200 to 225, but I'm probably gonna be coming around right around 215. I'm trying to put on some muscle for the short or the fast twitch and the for the explosive power. And I've been, intaking more protein and just doing a lot more, a lot of fast twitch fiber stuff and also calisthenics. So I still want to, have my shape and all that. But, I'm looking at right around 215-ish, 210, 215-ish to be greased lightning.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I know we spoke a little earlier about your training and whatnot. Have you thought about training other bare knuckle fighters in your weight class, or you're primarily sticking with the guys that you would normally train with MMA wise?
I train with MMA guys. There are some guys that are fighting in bare knuckle. I don't know if they're at the same organization, but there's some guys that are doing that. I'm kind of just staying where I'm at right now, training with the MMA guys that I have, because who knows who I can end up be fighting sometime soon. I could be facing this person. In another, next down the line, there's a lot of these guys and these other organizations out there. I don't know how reputable they are. I know that BKFC is a very reputable organization. They're going to be around for a while. So the other ones I'm not sure about.
I
think I'm just going to stick with, training what I'm doing for this bare knuckle fighting and focusing on it as a fighter. And just in this focusing on maybe being the champion of the organization and or just showcasing really well and doing well as a fighter, and then later on maybe coaching people to how to do it.
You've been fighting for a while, as I mentioned, in various different organizations. You fought many high profile MMA fighters. Is there added pressure going into this event, being that the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship has such a buzz? There's a lot of people that are going to be, probably a lot more people that are going to be paying attention to your fights. And, if you were fighting for some of the other promotions out there like Gladiator Challenge or King of the Cage, and this being your first official Bare Knuckle boxing fight, is there more pressure for you psychologically going into this fight, or is it any other fight?
Well, no, it's definitely not like any other fight. This is very, very unique and very special. And as far as being nervous or having the feeling of more pressure, I have the major advantage in this. Anybody who's ever trained with me in the past or sparred with me, you can ask them, ranging from Team Punishment, Rico Rodriguez, Tito Ortiz, all these guys from the past will say that the last thing people want to do is just box with me. It always ends up in the gym where guys are end up shooting on me or start kicking. So I've always had a really strong advantage with punching, and so I'm taking all the elements of this bare knuckle fighting into consideration, like as far as busting my hands and the angles and doing all that, and like Mr. Feldman said, I am my art. This is my new art.
David, I expect, and I'm sure this is the case, you guys are still trying to acquire talent from the MMA side and maybe even the boxing side as well. Are you close or maybe in the not-too-distant future having a high-profile MMA fighter come over anymore, MMA fighters or boxers that you think that you'll add to your roster?
I mean, we have one of the best fighters that ever fought, hands down, that's about to sign a contract with us. The thing is we have to be very careful as a growing promotion and, with us spending our money, that we spend it wisely and that we build our own talent. So we can't just pull over guys with big names from UFC, from these different organizations, from boxing, because, they do require a lot of money and they're worth that money. But at the same respect, they may do a fight for us and then go back and fight for their respective sports. What we're trying to do is build guys that want to fight in bare knuckle fighting and stay with bare knuckle fighting and not go back and forth, because we feel we need to brand ourselves. We need to build our own fighters, build our own champions. And that's really going to be our focus going forward. And, talking with Aaron, I don't think he has really any any ambition right now to fight MMA. I mean, he wants to give this bare knuckle fighting a shot and see where he can end up with that without mixing it up with anything else. And that's the kind of guy that
Absolutely.
We want to bring to our organization.
And what about, you know, venturing off possibly to different venues? I mean, I know you've got a lot of people that are, you know, familiar with the commissions. You've got Sean Wheelock, I believe. You've got, Brian Peterson and others that, you know, would definitely have familiarity as far as getting the sport sanctioned in other states. Is that a goal, and is that something you guys are still working on? Is there any states in particular that you would want to run in going into the future?
Well, we're already officially sanctioned right now in 5 states, which I'm not going to mention until we go there because there is competition now. But we're officially in 5 states right now. We're only doing 2 states because of availabilities with arenas. But our next event in January is going to be in another state. And then, like I stated in a couple of these interviews, we're going to do at least 4 to 6 different states next year. But we have to open up carefully, and we have to be selective. And it really doesn't matter where it is, because wherever we're at, we're going to do a very good crowd because it's something unique. And, you know, we're televised, so we're drawing from the public all around the United States and Canada. But with that being said, is there any place we'd love to be? Yeah, I mean, I would have to lie if I said I didn't want to be in New York City at Madison Square Garden, or I didn't want to be at
sure,
the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. I mean, we'd love to be there, and that's our ultimate goal, to open up those kind of states, you know, one day. And we do think at the pace we're going now, it's not going to be too far down the road. You know, we still have to prove ourselves. We have to prove that our injuries, you know, our lack of injuries is sustainable. I mean, so far we had 44 men and women fighting bare knuckle. We had one broken hand, one sprained hand or sprained wrist, one broken hand, one sprained wrist, one broken thumb, and one broken nose. 44 men and women fighting bare knuckle. I mean, that in my mind, that's less than boxing or MMA, or at worst, it's equivalent to them. It's definitely, without a doubt, not worse than those other sports. So I think we're on the same level there, and as we can remain consistent with that type of thing, I think that's when we're going to have the opportunity to open up more and more states.
The pay-per-view model, arguably, you know, if you look at the UFC, the UFC puts on pay-per-views, you know, once a month, maybe once every 2 months, and the prices have gotten very, very higher, or very high, I think, for a lot of consumers out there. And, you know, as a result, we've seen a decrease in pay-per-view buys. Now, your pay-per-views are not at all high priced. But recently, if you look at some of the streaming, you know, fights, there was this Logan Paul versus KSI that did very well, 800,000 viewers, and many more streamed it. Millions of people actually streamed it, and the event did very, very well. I don't know how often they could put events like that out there. But have you guys had any type of thought about as far as maybe going to an all streaming model, or with the pay per view model, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, like it's humbling to even say. I'm not going to mention the network, but one of the biggest streaming networks or streaming platforms in the world we're actually in talks with right now, and it's amazing that we're talking to them. But yes, so to answer your question, yes, we're definitely going to be streaming in 2019. Our model is probably going to be to do 2 or 3 major pay-per-view events on pay-per-view television, and then 5 or 6 events streaming them. Streaming is becoming just not even the wave of the future, but the norm even so right now. You know, people are streaming, plugging into their TVs, and streaming it right to their TVs. So with that being said, I mean, streaming is the way we're going to have to be going. And in 2019, we absolutely plan on streaming some of these events. We have a plan of doing some dark shows. We have a plan of doing some network televised shows. And we have a plan of doing some streaming and some pay-per-view shows. So we have some really aggressive plans for 2019. We feel that we have to sprint out of the starting blocks as we did with our first 2 shows and keep up that pace, and can't really slow down because we're gaining the attention of the combat sport and actually just the mainstream consumer at this point, and we just want to keep that going.
Can you give us an idea, besides the Aaron Brink and the Jason Fan fight, Can you give us an idea of some of the fights that are going to be on the October 20th show, or at least some of the fighters that you plan on having?
Yeah, we have a woman's fight. We should have the contract signed tomorrow. We have Christine Fiera, really, really tough Muay Thai girl, and an MMA fighter fighting a really good MMA fighter and Golden Glove boxer from California, Jennifer Tate. So that's going to be one woman's bout that's going to be really, really exciting. We have a lot of local guys from the Biloxi, Mississippi, Pensacola, and New Orleans area. We have the heavyweight final. Sam Shoemaker is going to be battling Arnold Adams, which will be a tremendous fight. And we have the quarterfinal round of the eight-man lightweight tournament. And we're also talking right now about putting Kendall Grove back in on this one. We just want to make sure we find the right match for him. We tentatively could be fighting a guy that scored a really nice knockout on the undercard in this last fight, and he's former Alabama football player, Marcel Stamps. So we're talking about that, talking to Charles Barnett. So there's definitely some guys that we're going to ink here in the next day or two. But again, like I said earlier in this program, we just want to be really smart about what we're doing, and everything that we do, we have to be smart right now, because you know this money that we have with investors and how we're rolling this out can go very, very fast. And if it goes too fast, then we don't have anything to produce these events with. So we're trying to be really smart about how we're rolling this out. And I think we're doing a great job with it so far. I think the publicity that we got, I don't think you could have got this in any other sport or any other activity really anywhere in the world. So we're going to ride off the coattails of all the media attention that we're getting, and hopefully that leads us into the promised land.
Absolutely. Aaron, visualization, I don't know if you normally visualize how your fights turn out, or if you're one of those people that just go into the cage, into the ring, and just fight. But visualization going on for this fight coming up?
I visualize being able to be very effective with my strikes and to showcase very well. However that goes, it could go in the first, second round, third round. I'm guessing it'll be a stoppage and a knockout or a TKO within the first couple, two or three rounds.
Well, absolutely. And I really, really look forward to seeing this. I think it's going to be great. And Aaron, you know, before I let you go, you are training and you've been around the sport for quite a long time. Can you tell us, or have you been speaking to any of the people that you know in the sport about bare knuckle fighting, and can you sort of gauge their interest as to whether or not, you know, there really is an appetite for MMA fighters out there to go the bare knuckle route?
You know, I've talked to some of the other guys that they're fighting for another organization, so I've just kind of disconnected from them, and I don't train with them either. I just kind of keep to myself, and I just stay to my people over at Undisputed in City Heights in San Diego, and just work with my boxing guys that I trust, and I'm just going to stay loyal to David Feldman, and just, you know, and just focus on BKFC, and you're going to see some really good things from me coming up, and this is going to be the first one on October 20th.
Yeah, absolutely. October 20th in Biloxi, Mississippi. It's going to be very, very exciting. And you know, people can go to your website at bareknuckle.tv, David, and they can find out more information about what you've got coming up. Anything that you want to say sort of in closing as we wrap up the interview?
No, I mean, just really thanks for having us, Bob. It's been a pleasure to be on here. Definitely tune in. The action just gets better and better. Tune in October 20th, live on pay-per-view television, and you can find it on any major cable or satellite platform. You can also find it on Fight TV if you're not in the United States or Canada. And if you're in the Gulf Coast area, you got to stop down and check it out. And you can get your tickets at bareknuckle.tv. So we're looking forward to a great show. We're looking forward to showcase Aaron Brink on this one. I'm really, truly, truly, not just because he's on here, I'm looking forward to seeing what he's going to bring to the table, and I'm expecting fireworks.
Likewise, Aaron.
Thank you. Yes, I wanted to thank Undisputed Boxing Gym for all the boxing and sparring that I have, and also Beef Palace, my sponsors, and Kennedy Insurance. I'm just so grateful. And thank you, Mr. Feldman, for having me on the show.
Thank you, bud.
Well, thank you both. I really, really appreciate it. I think it's a good fit, Aaron and Bare Knuckle Fighting. And David, again, thank you for coming on the show. And hopefully we can have you on in the future as things progress with your organization.
That would be great, Bob. It would be great. Thanks again for having me and look forward to coming on again soon.
Aaron, and thank you, David. So
thank you. Thank you.
All right. That was Aaron Brink and David Feldman here on Carson's Corner, president of Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. I'm excited. I really am. And, you know, David touched on a lot of points. I think it would be really, really good if they could sign a deal with the streaming network. I think I know what streaming network he's talking about. And, you know, that seems to be the way of the future. It really, really does. I mean, you know, pay-per-view buys in this economy, it's not easy. You know, even $29, which is not a lot of money. I mean, that's what the old UFC pay-per-views used to be years ago. It's just, you know, arguably it's a dying model. You know, it is, especially with the streaming capability, people legally streaming these pay-per-views, and just like I said, the economy in general, it's hard. The UFC pay-per-views now are like $7,000. I mean, they're just absolutely ridiculous. And then you've got this Gennady Golovkin Canelo Alvarez fight, and they're listing it as only $84.99. Eddie Goldman posted about that on his Facebook page. Only $84.99, ladies and gentlemen. That's their idea of cheap nowadays. But you know, I got to tell you, it was really, really good having David on the program. And I was part of their initial press conference when they announced the rollout of the first event, and you know who they had on the first event. You had people like that was June 2nd, by the way. Wow, can't believe it was 3 months ago. Right, it feels like it was yesterday. You had Rico Rodriguez, you had DJ Lindemann, you had Eric Prindle, Sam Shoemaker out of there. You had Sean Wheelock on the call, and you had, of course, David Feldman. I believe David was on the call, and Brian Pedersen and others just kind of explaining going on. And you know, since then, they've really, really taken off. And then they hired a PR firm, and then they had a lot of investors come in, and you know they're doing their thing, and you got to take your hat off to them, and you got to appreciate this opportunity that exists for fighters out there. The reason why a lot of fighters are going to bare knuckle boxing, and this has happened, you know, even before the launch of the first event of the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, is because MMA is not becoming sustainable for fighters anymore. I mean, if you're a UFC fighter, you fight maybe three times a year, if you're lucky, and you know, you're on a roster with 400 or 500 fighters, and it's I don't know how sustainable it is, you know. And I'd be willing to bet that fighters are probably making comparable money in bare knuckle fighting. And that's why you're seeing guys like Joe Riggs and Melvin Gillard and so many other fighters, Cody McKenzie, going overseas and fighting because, you know, there's money. Fighters will go where there's money and where there's opportunity. So there's a lot to capitalize out there. There's a lot of misery amongst MMA fighters out there. And so it's good. I think this is a good opportunity for mixed martial art fighters. All right, what do we got going on here, ladies and gentlemen? I posted on Twitter. I've been really active on Twitter. Well, not really active, but it's Invicta 31 that took place last weekend. Also, the UFC, you've got UFC 228. You know me on Twitter. I just like to say whatever the hell's on my mind. And women's flyweight fight, this championship fight between Shevchenko and Nico Montaigne. And I think Shevchenko is like this ridiculous favorite. I mean, she is just opening up as probably one of the biggest favorites ever. And it's like, it's a squash match. You know, the old pro wrestling, the old WWE squash matches where, you know, you have the favorite wrestler just beat a overmatched opponent to get the wrestler over. And you know, that's what's going to happen here. Nico Montaigne is 3-2. I mean, give me a break. You know, she doesn't stand a chance. And during the embedded, I think it's the second embedded, UFC embedded episode, they show Nico Montaigne getting physical therapy and just going through all this pain and whatnot. You know, it's funny because it's almost as if the UFC is conditioning the audience to expect her to lose. That just making the fight, just getting in there and fighting Valentina is like some sort of accomplishment for her in a favorable light. You know what I mean? If you watch these embeds, and I do watch the UFC embeds, I do. I like watching some of the fighters behind the scenes. I think that they oftentimes can give you clues about what's going on in fighters' personal lives. Like, for example, a couple UFC events, they had Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier, and they showed Stipe Miocic and his overbearing wife. And nobody kind of picked up on it. I mean, Stipe's actually joked about his relationship with his wife before and how he's basically at her command and everything like that. She was having him build this crib or build something, and you know, he had to stop what he was doing and build this thing. And I'm like, well, maybe that's what caused him to lose that fight against Daniel Cormier. You can't say it one way or the other, but, you know, could Stipe's wife be the reason why he lost that fight versus Daniel Cormier? I don't know. She didn't come across it in a good light, I thought, but you know, who knows? But it's episodes really can give you an insight as to what's going on in fighters' lives. And I like the programming very much so. But they didn't really show Nika Montaigne in a positive light, I thought. I mean, they're just making her look like this girl that's just going to get slaughtered, okay? Valentina is just going to slaughter her. And what's up with Valentina's coach? That guy looks like he's lost a lot of weight. He's a very, very interesting man, Pavel Fatonov. I'm very interested in that man. Very mysterious man, but he lost a lot of weight. Good for him. He was heavier last year or the year before, and I don't know what his deal is there. But, you know, this pay-per-view, UFC 228, it's not going to get a lot of pay-per-view buys. But I got to tell you, there are some good fights on this card. I'm going to try to pull up the card in front of me now because I remember seeing and saying, okay, you know, some of these fights are pretty decent. You've got the main event fight, which I think Tyron Woodley is going to have a hard time with this Darren Till. Hopefully Darren Till makes the weight because he looks just absolutely huge in the lead up to this fight. You know, he just looks very, very big. And, of course, he's had a history of not making weight. He has his personal trainer. He has his personal nutritionist. But oftentimes that's not an indication of how these fighters, if they'll make weight or not. Oftentimes we don't know that there's a real weight problem until, you know, the day of weigh-ins. We just don't know. And so he could come in and he could be, you know, 10 pounds overweight. And then, you know, hopefully Tyron will accept the fight and, you know, he'll have nothing to lose at that point because he'll make extra money off of Till's purse. And it won't be, even if he loses, he won't lose his championship. That's a fight that I'm looking forward to. And again, I think that's going to be a tough fight for Woodley, but who knows? Woodley could take him down and boom. And, you know, that could be the story of the fight. I mean, Woodley's not going to stand with Darren Till. And Darren Till has these big lumbering shots, these big punches that could land and could knock him out, just like he knocked out Cowboy, you know. And he beat decisively, it wasn't decisively, it was a split decision, I believe it was, Wonder Boy, but, you know, MMA math doesn't add up a lot of times, but, you know, it's going to be an interesting fight to see that. You've got Zabit Magomed Shapirov. I hate pronouncing those Dagestani names. Brandon Davis. Brandon Davis is taking this fight on short notice. And he said that he was going to eventually fight Zabit, and he might as well do it now, might as well fight him now, as opposed to down the road. He's ready, and, you know, hopefully that'll be a good fight. You've got the undercard, which is really, really exciting to me. You've got definitely some fights that I'm looking forward to. You've got Jimmy Rivera fighting John Dodson. I don't like John Dodson. I have a bit of a personal bias against John Dodson. I tried to get him to come on the show, and he was just very, very dismissive. Very, very dismissive of your humble host, Bob Carson. And there's just something about him. Is it me, or is this just something about John Dodson you want to smack him around a little bit? I don't think I could. I think he'd be too quick for me. But he's just got that annoying childlike grin. You just want to smack him around. I want to give him a smack. I hope he loses. You know, he's friends with John Jones. He trains at Jackson Wink MMA, and I just want him to lose. I want Rivera to win. Rivera is a Jersey guy. He's a Team Tiger Shawman guy. He's training with Julio Arce, training with some other fighters. And, you know, he had his 20-some-odd fight win streak snapped by Marlon Moraes in something like 42 seconds or so. So I hope he's able to rebound, and I hope that Dodson actually stands there and fights him and doesn't run. We'll see what happens, you know. But I'm rooting for Rivera on that. You also got a women's fight. You got Carla Esparza versus Tatiana Suarez. I want Carla to win this fight. I like Carla. You know, she seems like a good girl. Doesn't use CBD products or marijuana that we're aware of here, although maybe she could have. She once was a slack girl. She was one of these girls that works in bars and just gives people shots and whatnot. And she's also friends with, what's her name? I can't think of her name, but a female fighter that possibly could be a bad influence on her. No. Who knows? I don't know. I'm just kidding. But she's going against Tatiana Suarez, who's 6-0, who has many wins via rear naked choke, is a very, very accomplished wrestler, and, you know, has had problems with injuries before, but, you know, is nonetheless a phenom. It's almost like a Cynthia Calvillo, but, you know, the jury's still out on her. She's fighting a former champion. She's fighting someone that definitely is battle-tested. And I thought that Carla Esparza won against Claudia Gadelha. I was very, very disappointed in that ridiculous decision. I think that was in Chicago. And, you know, Claudia didn't deserve to win that fight. Carla really should have won that fight. But nonetheless, this is a fight that I'm looking forward to. Aljamain Sterling is fighting Cody Stamann. These two were supposed to fight. And they've been going back and forth on Twitter. And, you know, Aljamain has a lot to say about this. Bounced back from tough fights. And he's definitely an upper echelon bantamweight out there. And, you know, I'm curious to see what he's going to do. I mean, Stamann is a solid fighter himself, winning a very, very close decision over Brian Caraway. So this should be an exciting fight there. Charles Byrd versus Darren Stewart, I don't really care about that fight. And the early prelims, you've got Diego Sanchez versus Craig White. Can't believe Diego Sanchez is still fighting. I mean, Jesus. You know, you really got to sort of wonder why that is, you know. But, you know, if he suffers another knockout loss, I think he should go the route of Jake Ellenberger. Just hang it up, okay? Just you know, that's the smart thing to do. But you know what? He may not. It just may be his pride getting to him. Who knows? All fighters have different reasons as far as why they, you know, they continue in the sport well past their prime. And so, and I do have the right to comment. Some people are like, well, you have no right to comment on fighters and whether or not they should retire. Yes, we do. We have every right to. Well, why don't I have a right to do that? Why? That makes no sense, that argument. And so, you know, that's just for UFC 228. I'll be watching it, I think, because I don't have my – I work two jobs now, and the one job I'm off of, and I should be able to fit this pay-per-view before I have to go to my other job on Saturday night. And so I'll bring the laptop to the other job if I can't watch it here at home. I'm living in this new apartment now. I'm living about 50 feet, maybe 75 feet, from my old house in Long Branch, right on the Atlantic Ocean. And we're living this smoke shop and this nutrition center. And the thing is that my room is huge. My room has like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 windows, okay? And I don't have air conditioning in this room. And so the windows are open, and I'm right above the main road here in Long Branch. And I hear every car that goes by, you know, people fighting, pedestrians, college kids, talking right underneath my window. It's just madness. I'm sure during the course of this program, you could probably hear a lot of the car activity in the background there. But I'm right across the street from Coffee House. I'm in a really, really nice area. It's really, really great. But I got to get air conditioning so I can shut these goddamn windows, and then I can actually sleep. You know, although I do sleep because I have my sleep machine. I turn that on, and it just drowns out the noise out there. But it's really hot. It's disgusting in here, and it's very, very noisy. You know, 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, you can dump street sweepers, fill in the blank, just going right past my head, and it's very, very distracting. And the internet sucks here. I got to get internet. I have this Wi-Fi hotspot service, but it's very slow. It's much slower than the house I moved from. So I'm going to have to get Verizon, these thieves in here, to put a modem up, and that's how I'm going to be able to get my internet, because the internet is not good here. Otherwise, so I'm going to have to have myself siphoned by Verizon and pay them whatever they want for their internet service. And hopefully it'll be above, you know, 5 or 6 megabytes per second. You know, it's something that I need. I need internet service here. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it, ladies and gentlemen. All right, you had Invicta 31 that I wanted to talk about. Invicta, yeah. I watched this event via UFC Fight Pass in 2019. It's not clear what's going to happen to UFC Fight Pass. I don't know. But I try to watch every Invicta event that I can. And just going off of memory here, a couple fights that really stick out. I didn't get a chance to see the women's all Invicta's women's the championship fight between Jindarova and what's her name, the other girl, Marangian, the evil princess who looks kind of hot, very hot during her weigh-in there. But the other one won, Marangian won via head and arm choke on the ground in the second round. The fight before that, I don't know, what was the fight before that? Was that Pearl Gonzalez? Pearl Gonzalez fought that Brazilian girl. And Pearl Gonzalez won. And I think she's 2-0 now since she's been back in Invicta. I think she beat Callie Robbins her first fight back. And now it's the Brazilian lady who I can't pronounce who wore the sunglasses to the weigh-in now. Lisa Spangler, who works at Petco, who works like 3 or 4 hours. Young girl, probably still lives with her parents. Nothing wrong with that. I live with my parents until I was 27 years old, folks. She won a very controversial decision against Shayna Young. I thought that fight could have went either way. Spangler is a good all-around fighter. I don't think she's anything special, though. I don't think she's going to be the next champion, but who knows. Miranda Maverick won against somebody. I forget who she fought. was an opponent that didn't really have that good of a record, as I recall. And she won via armbar. I think she's 4-1 now. Now she's talking about title shot. You know, I got to tell you, these women, it's unbelievable because, look, I understand that there's just not a lot of women fighters out there. And I understand that, you win two or three of these fights in a row, and all of a sudden you're talking about title fights. But give me a break. You know, female fighters, I think in general, get very, very emotional, get way too emotional in there. And there's so much crying in Invicta. And, when you have somebody wins a fight, it's just like, like they won the championship. There's too much emotion, if that makes sense, I think. These women, like I could see someone like Felicia Spencer, who's 5-0, 6-0, okay. She's fighting Pam Sorensen. She's a phenom, definitely. And she fights because of the lack of competition in the featherweight division. Maybe she could fight a Cyborg or maybe she could fight. I'm not sure who the featherweight Invicta champion is, but you could see that happening. But some of these women that get two or three fights and are have a barely 500 record, talking about title shots, it just seems to me ridiculous. It really does, and that seems to be the case in Invicta. A lot of these women fighters, they win two fights, or they have a winning record of 3-1 or 4-2 record or 4-1 or whatever. Then all of a sudden they're talking about title fights. It's a little bit premature. You have to know your place. These women have to ultimately know their place and just keep on fighting and then build up a solid record. Some of these women have solid records. Some of the women that have fought in Brazil and have come over to the United States, I mean, they have more than a handful of fights. But, you've got fighters like Martin Mallard. Martin is 4-2, who beat a 1-1 opponent in her last fight and a 3-2 opponent in Ashley Nichols, talking about, I'm the greatest ever. This, come on, give me a break, okay? Have some maturity. Show some respect, please. Just my takeaway, one of my takeaways here from watching Invicta 31. I think I posted a couple times on Twitter about some of the fights and some of my thoughts. And, we'll see what happens in the near future with Invicta 32. There's no question that Shannon Knapp and Caitlin Young have built some stars there and put on some good shows. I really, really think that's the case. By the way, Caitlin Young actually responded to one of the threads about Kayla Harrison. A couple weeks ago, I posted something on the Underground about Kayla Harrison's personality and how I thought that she was a little fake and just a little self-centered. That was my initial impression about her. And again, I don't know, this woman. And first impressions could be wrong. And I'm very reactionary on the form. And I have every right to be. Everybody should be very reactionary on the form. You shouldn't have any filter. You should say whatever's on your mind. And if you're wrong, you get ridiculed for it, okay? God knows I've been very wrong. And I've been very reactionary a lot of times, and you get flamed for it. That's the way the internet works. That's the way free speech works in this country. So I posted this, and it was a big thread. It was a big deal on the Underground Forum. Of course, everybody started targeting me. Everybody started insulting me. Then Kayla Harrison was on with Puke Thomas. It was just horrendous. And she was talking about this thread and how it upsets her, and Puke Thomas told her not to go in the forums. See, he's too good for the forums now. I remember this guy started after me, and I remember he was begging for attention on the forums and ripping me off, and still to this day the guy rips me off every freaking show. Whatever, I don't care. I don't take these people seriously. But now all of a sudden, you know, these guys, you know, he works for SiriusXM and probably gets paid maybe $100 a show, or maybe $200 a show if he's lucky. And all of a sudden, he's a big shot now. He's too good for us forum members, you know. Oh, yeah, please. He tells her not to go in the forums. Well, I disagree. I think that MMA fighters should go on the forums. I think they owe it to us to go on the forums. If it wasn't for the fans out there, people like myself and others, these fighters wouldn't be anywhere. And it all started on the MMA forums. There's no other sport where you could talk to promoters, to fighters, and you could have such a tight-knit community than the MMA community. And the underground forum is central to that, ladies and gentlemen. Dana White used to post on the underground forum. Everybody did. And a lot of people still do. And, you know, I don't go to this Reddit crap and all that stuff. It's all about the underground. Sure Dog was always horrible. They always banned me. They're horrendous. But it's the underground. It's all about the underground. And they should go on the forums, and they should see what people are saying about them. Because, yeah, the forums could be very cruel. They could be very, very unforgiving. But they're honest. They're real. And you know, that's sometimes what people are all about. And, you know, if you want to shield yourself from that, all you're doing is just making yourself more and more and more sensitive. And there's a sensitivity problem with women fighters and with fighters in general. There really is. Nobody in the MMA media criticizes fighters. They all, by and large, want to get buddy-buddy with fighters, take pictures. You know, your Puke Thomas taking a picture, I think, at UFC, one of the UFCs in Texas, with Demetrius Johnson, you know, hanging out with the Diaz brothers. Oh, it's so cool. I can hang out with this person or that person. I could take a picture. And I'm telling you, that mindset really exists. It definitely exists amongst the MMA media, which are corrupt, which are fanboys looking to get fighter approval and don't want to post anything offensive about fighters because that'll piss them off and they'll lose access to them. And that's unfortunately the climate that we have right now. So someone like Kayla Harrison, you know, who that's my initial impression on her. I don't know. She's clearly got talent. She's a 2-time gold medalist, you know, and you know, she could be a very nice person. I'm sure she is. I don't know. That's the initial impression I got. Somebody like her will get more and more sensitive if they keep on listening to people like Puke Thomas and others. You should go on the forums. You should see this stuff, and you could respond. You know, that's the whole point. Is you don't like what somebody says, you respond. But you know, some of the people after I posted that thread on Kayla Harris, they were saying I should be banned and this is fighter bashing. Give me a break. I mean, how is a fighter bashing? We can't talk about fighters' personalities. We can't talk about fighters, you know, their personal life at all. We just have to, you know, say whatever the clowns like Ariel Helwani say. Give me a break. That's ridiculous. I mean, fighters, as far as I'm concerned, a professional fighter, and Kayla kind of acknowledged this, if you're a professional fighter, then everything is fair game. You're a public figure, okay? There's nothing that's out of bounds. Even myself, and believe me, I'm no celebrity here, but I can be considered a public figure within the MMA community. My life has always been very public. This show is very, very well known. I'm very, very well known amongst the fighters and amongst, you know, not the casual fans, but the hardcore fans. No question about that. You know, my social security number has been posted online before. People have posted websites against me. You think for one second I cry about it? No, I don't cry about it. That's the way it goes. People challenge me online to fights and all that stuff. That's the way it goes. That's it. You know, that's the life. And people are too sensitive, and everybody wants to censor speech. And I used to be on that side, believe me, folks. You know, I'm very politically active, as you people know, and I used to be very friendly with the folks over at, you know, some of these aggrieved groups like Media Matters and all that want to, you know, boycott and censor speech that offends them, and it's wrong. It's one of the reasons why Donald Trump has been elected, is because of the sensitivity culture that we have now. It's wrong, and there's a backlash to it. And I see that happening in MMA, and, you know, that's why you need people like me talk about personalities and talk about some of these female fighters and fighters like Cowboy Cerrone, who's completely out of his mind. Did you see this? This Cowboy Cerrone went on Joe Rogan's show talking about using drugs, and, you know, of course, that's the place. Joe Rogan's a cool guy. He's a hip guy. You know, he uses drugs, and lifts weights at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, kettlebells, and he's in great shape, and he can throw Muay Thai kicks, and he's a black belt. And, you know, God forbid if you're obese or whatever, you're just a subhuman, according to Donald Cerrone on the program. And Cerrone's talking about Jackson Wink, how he split from Jackson Wink, and how, you know, anybody can train. Today he was insulting the homeless people, calling them bums. And everybody misses this, is that, you know, while Cerrone's talking about Jackson Wink, and he has a problem with not Mike Winklejohn, he has a problem with almost everybody at that gym. You know, like, he was insulting Frank Lester, he was insulting some other people there. So it's not just against Mike Winklejohn. He has a problem with members of that team and the staff at that team. And, you know, what's becoming blatantly obvious, you look at this guy Cowboy, is that he's completely out of his mind. Nobody's talking about this. You know, everybody's like, oh, you know, he's crazy, he's cool, you know. Yeah, you know, look, he's an MMA fighter, and MMA fighters are crazy. There's no question about that. But this guy is going to wind up hurting himself. He's almost died several times. And he really is a psychotic. He's suicidal. I don't know if he's homicidal. He may be homicidal. Who knows? And you could clearly see that this guy is off in the head. And he's being egged on by Rogan. And Rogan's kissing his ring, and they're talking about, you know, how bad it is over at Winklejohn, how people can, anybody can go and train and fight. It's all about money. It's all, you know, it's a puppy mill, as Cowboy said. But the point is, the point that I took away from his appearance on Joe Rogan is that this guy is a psychotic, and this guy needs professional help. He really does. And I've always known that about Cowboy. You could just see. And I'm right about this. I'm telling you, something's going to happen to this guy. He's going to wind up dying. He's got a child. Well, I think he's got a few children. And something's going to wind up happening to him. He's going to wind up dying. And, you know, almost like an Evan Tanner, but I don't think Evan was as bad as Cowboy was. Eddie Goldman knew Evan very well. And Evan was on a journey to nowhere. And, you know, Eddie could fill you in on more of that stuff. Very, very fascinating guy. But, you know, this is the point that I have about MMA and our culture, is that nobody calls out bad behavior anymore. It's all about Cowboy's cool and great. You know, he's going to die at 36 years old. He's going to die by the time he's 40 years old. That's great. He's cool, you know. Rogan, of course, loves this stuff and adores this stuff. There's just no morality. This sport is completely void of any type of morality. And that's why we're here, folks, okay? I am the moral compass. I've appointed myself the moral compass of mixed martial arts. I'm tired of people getting drugged up. I'm tired of people like Cowboy talking about shrooms and you know, getting high to get by. And that's become part of the culture. And it's wrong, folks. It's absolutely wrong. So nobody wants to admit it. Everybody wants to. I heard Cowboy on some radio show today. So this guy was a real clown. This radio host is just horrendous, and he's just laughing at everything Cowboy says, like a laughter. Oh my God! Oh, I can't believe. You know, it's just disgusting. It really is. Cowboy needs professional help, ladies and gentlemen. Needs professional help. Okay. All right, what else we got here? It's 10:15. My ocular pressure is killing me, folks. I got eye problems. Ocular pressure right behind the eyes. I don't know. I think I stare at computers too long. I think that's my problem, and so it affects my eyes. I take like 17 Advil and it goes away, folks. It's the only thing that'll help my ocular pressure. But it's not fun having ocular pressure right behind the eyes. And nobody could tell me what the fuck it is. Nobody, believe me, I went to a doctor. I had an MRI 10 years ago, 11 years. Nobody knows. Nobody. Our medical system is completely useless and inefficient. There's just no question about that. So I got that. I'm off tomorrow. I'm going to try to get some furniture for my room here now. Maybe try to get a bed. I'm on an air mattress now. It's really bad. I'm 340 pounds, such a fat slob. I'm on this air mattress, and I could just feel that it's only a matter of time before it bursts. It's all uneven. It's not a very good way to sleep here, but it's the mattress of the poor, ladies and gentlemen. What can you do? What can I do? It has to be an air mattress there. So I'm going to try to do that. I got to take care of some schoolwork tomorrow. I'm glad I'm off because I work 70 hours a week. You know, for a fat guy, you got to give it to me, man. I carry it very well. I'm very athletic. I work two jobs. I'm not a lazy person. I go to school. I got this show. I got my political show on Monday. I'm killing myself. I'm absolutely killing myself working and being impoverished. And that's how Americans are. That's what the working class is. You know, they tell us we're lazy. They tell us that we're complacent. No, it's the exact opposite. We're not lazy. You know, I don't know any lazy people. My roommates are in the same position I am. They're working 17 jobs and they're never here. We're all never here because we're working. And somebody's stealing our labor. Somebody's taking the profit that we're making for them and sticking it right in their fat pocket. And it's disgusting. It really is. All right. One thing I want to tell you that I haven't spoken about since the last time I was on the program here with you is that the UFC, I posted this on Facebook, the UFC actually has allowed me now to apply for press passes. This is a huge development now. I don't think Dana White is in charge of administering the press passes. I think they're going with either a separate company or a separate division within WMEIMG. Granted, yours truly, Bob Carson, the right to apply for press passes. And I may try to get into this MSG show with Weidman. I love that last name, folks. Weidman. Such a great last name. A real, real last name of a competitor. And Rockhold, too. And I don't know who else is on that card, but that's right at Madison Square Garden. And typically at Madison Square Garden, the media seating is very, very small, so I don't know if I'll get into that, but it's worth trying. I'll try to get into it. It'll be my first UFC I ever cover. It'll be historic, folks. It really will. And so I'll keep you posted on that. It'll be nice if I can cover some UFC events. The UFC has contacted Eddie Goldman. I posted this on Facebook about appearing in their 25th anniversary documentary about the unified rules, of mixed martial arts in 2001. Eddie Goldman, going back to 2001, interviewed Bob Meyerowitz on his edition of No Holds Barred on the IATA network well before Puke Thomas and the UFC fanboys. I mean, how old was Ariel Helwani when it was Ariel 15 years old when it took place? It's Eddie Goldman, folks. And Eddie refused to cooperate with the UFC, did not allow himself to be interviewed for this watered-down propaganda. And you got to take your hat off to Eddie Goldman. Principle, integrity first. I don't even know if I have as much integrity as Eddie. I don't. Believe me, if somebody called, if one of these networks called me tomorrow, I'd do it. But you got to hand to them. He's the great one, ladies and gentlemen, the great Eddie Goldman. Follow him at hbnews.blogspot.com, eddiegoldman.com. Make sure to follow him, folks. What a great show and a great man. Looks like ADCC, ADCCnews.com is down. Looks like they're Zufa, or not Zufa, I'm sorry, but Flash Entertainment now has shut them down. They're only going to be doing ADC news and articles, and they're not going to be covering the UFC, which I don't think anybody cares because nobody went to that site anyway. Not dissing the site, but nobody goes to that website. I think websites in general are going to be on the way down. You know, even this MMA fighting is not as popular anymore. And people are going to live streaming. People are going to podcasting now. It's not in, the future of the MMA media is not in print. It's not with website articles. I think it's with digital online streaming. There's no question about that. So that's another bit of news out there. What else here? What else, Donna? What else? I don't know. That's it. I think that's pretty much it. As far as the MMA show, I'm not sure, but I'll probably do another show next week or the week before. Keep in mind, it's hard for me to do shows as often as I want to. I don't have an inclination to get guests anymore. I do do other shows. I was on the Martial Arts Chat with John Boy McElroy, reacting to UFC Lincoln Fight Night. I had some good back and forth with some of my panel members there. And I'm going to be on the round table this weekend for the Martial Arts Chat 100 episode. So we'll talk some UFC. We'll talk some things in the MMA. Should be fun. I always have fun on that program. And, yeah, like I said, I don't have any inclination to get guests, really. I mean, I got David Feldman. I've wanted to interview David Feldman for quite some time. That was really at the behest of Aaron. And David was very, very accommodating to me and came on the program. And we appreciate that. And so, you know, going forward, I'll probably have guests. My producer, I haven't been in touch with my producer. I pretty much told you what happened there. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen forward. I don't know. You know, I know what I want to do. I know, you know, my forum posting and how I get the show out there. Maybe it's a bit controversial, but, you know, I say what needs to be said. And if I'm wrong, if I'm reactionary, Lord knows the forum will let you know about it, folks. The forum sometimes is the best, I guess, the best receivers out there. All starts at the forum, ladies and gentlemen. It all traces back to the forum, the underground forums. All right, so that's it for this week's edition of Carson's Corner. Thank you very much to David Feldman, and thank you very much to Aaron Brink for coming on the show. It's been great. Make sure to visit the website at bareknucklefc.com and friend Aaron on Facebook. Aaron is one of the true gentlemen of the sport, one of the nicest guys you'll meet. Very personal, very humble, and it's great to see that he's fighting at 43 years old. I don't know how much Aaron has left, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I don't think Aaron's the same fighter he was 10, 15 years ago. But you know what? Who knows? You know, the guy still fights. He could win. This guy, Jason Fanny, is fighting his own fight. So Aaron should be able to beat him. But you never know, you know? I mean, you never know. But nonetheless, it's going to be exciting to see him fight on October 20th, okay? That's it for this week's edition of Carson's Corner. If you want to friend me, please do so. Facebook.carsonMMA, Twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. Make sure to follow us here on Blog Talk Radio. If you're into politics, radical revolutionary politics from a non-electoral standpoint, make sure to support the election boycott advocates. Don't vote, folks. Don't do it. Don't vote. They tell you to do one thing, you do the opposite. That's how it is. So that's how I live my life. The MMA media, the clowns on the forum talk about, oh, you do one thing, this guy's great. Well, believe the opposite. It's usually the opposite. As Malcolm X said, they're doing one thing, we're doing another. That's a very, very important notion to live by, okay? So check us out, the Carson's Corner with the election boycott advocates, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. here on Blog Talk Radio. My great host, Christopher Allen Driscoll, co-host, former media director for Ralph Nader's 3 presidential campaigns. And make sure to support us anywhere you can, on YouTube, YouTube.com/BobCarsonMMA. I'm everywhere, folks. I am everywhere. That's my word for it. All right. Thank you very much, those out there across the world who listen. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.